Okay. You are now listening to Talking Transparency, the podcast where trans parents talk transparently. And we're here with Cody Connor and Gray Lydon.
Hi, I'm Cody. Our other hosts, Melissa and Thea, are not with us today, but we are looking forward to an exciting conversation with Gray, a college student at ODU who's very involved with the Women and Gender Studies program there. But first, let's take a look at what we got going on in our calendar. I know this month, before the end of the month, we actually got a few events going on with the Kalos Coalition. On the 21st, we got our monthly trans family dinner. It's going to be taco night, but on the third Sunday of the month. On the 25th is going to be the resume workshop with John Ezra Rose, who works with BeatBots. That's going to be there to show everybody how to make a resume that gets past all the checks and people actually look at it, get it in the hands of a real person. And on the 27th is a new kind of event that we're doing with the Kalos Coalition, and it's going to be our monthly D&D game night. It's going to be the last Saturday of every month, so I'm really looking forward to that. Me and the kids got a bunch of new dice and books and all the works. And Gray, you got some things going on your side of the world.
Yeah, so I am the president of the OU Sexuality and Gender Alliance at Old Dominion University, which is the only queer organization on campus. And we're really excited because we're about to be launching our new affinity space, Black Sphere, which Black Sphere's mission is basically it's a diverse space for people of color to where they can welcome queer and students and allies to create to like further express their identities. Especially because ODU has is 45.7% white, but majority of the events that happen on campus for queer students are almost 95% white students attending. And we know realistically there are plenty of BIPOC students who are queer who just aren't coming out yet. So this is one of our new efforts to bring them in. We actually have a few events coming up. That Black Sphere will be hosting an R&B hip hop night on February 2nd from 5 to 9 p.m. on campus. And a Black Love movie night on February 13th from 5 to 9 p.m. on campus. And we will also be having our Arrow Ace Valentine's Craft Night on February 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. also on campus.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. I like that you guys are doing that. I like that you're making that effort.
My name's Producer Ty. I'm here as well. This was kind of a last-minute thing that we had to throw together because a couple of things fell through, and Gray was nice enough to come by, so I've got a mic next to me, which is not common, and we're not going to make a habit of it, but I am here. And I wanted to say something about Black Sphere. I think I am very impressed. I didn't know before I came here that that was a program that you all were doing, and I remember being younger, going to Tidewater Community College. I'm an African-American man, and kind of there was not a forced segregation of people in any way, but people kind of found their own little groups, and sometimes it could be intimidating when there was something that seemed very middle class and white for a lot of my friends who weren't used to being in that space, because I was more used to being in that space, to sort of like get integrated into that and feel like that's a place where they're going to be accepted. And to be proactive about that and to say, hey, we are honestly really trying to get involved. We don't see a difference here. We'd like you to be involved in what we're doing. I like that the student-led initiatives are moving in that direction, that things are opening up in that way. So I think that's a cool program.
Yeah, it's definitely something that we think a few people had brought up their concerns about how they felt that they were the only Black student in attendance, and we wanted to try to change that the best we could.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's great. And I do appreciate having Ty here with me tonight, keeping me from feeling alone without all my other co-hosts.
It was a necessary evil. We had to do it.
I do not consider it evil at all. So tell us, how did you, are you from Virginia? How did you get to where you are right now?
I'm not from Virginia, but I've lived in Virginia majority of my life. I originally came into ODU with a goal of engineering. And I took an intro to women's studies course. Their department name changed from women's studies to women and gender studies just last fall. That I was just doing as a basic gen ed to get it out of the way. And unintentionally, I completely fell in love completely dropped the goal for engineering and made a whole 180 pivot with my goals.
Well, what did it? What made you fall in love? Was it the hair, the smile? What?
I think it was honestly like just how empowering the class is. I never expected to be in a class that felt empowering.
Yeah. Expand on that.
Yeah. It's like from my experience, like most classes are just, they lecture at you and you just take notes. And this was the first time they're like, here's a theory. Why do you think this is the case? And forces you to critically think right in the spot and share those thoughts out loud with a bunch of, among your peers.
So I imagine since then you've taken more than that one class. Yes, have you found them all to be empowering?
Yes, they all are. And it's like, at this point, I'm now reading academic textbooks in my free time.
Wow.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's the sign.
Yeah.
That's the sign that you found something that you actually want to do. And so many people suffer through doing something that they feel like they absolutely need to do because everybody's telling them you got to be in STEM. You got to do this to get the money. But I can absolutely, I can't promise you anything, but I can certainly like tell you that a lot of the people that I know who grew up and decided I'm going to get a history degree, I'm getting an English degree. They're doing just fine. They're finding things where they can fit in. They're doing things that are more along the lines of what they want to do. And I do have some friends, I won't name any names, but I'm thinking of somebody right now who said, I'm going to get the computer science degree. I'm going to go through that and I'm just going to knuckle down and I'm going to get it. And it was really hard to integrate into all of the different, it's job to job because it's really not something they care about. They feel like they've lost their love of literature and all of those things that we grew up, you know, loving. So another voice to tell you that sounds like the right path if it's really jiving with how you feel.
No, definitely. Yeah.
And so women and gender studies, how many men are in your class?
It's very rare. I think two semesters ago, we had one straight man graduate. And other than that, the only other man I know in those classes is, a trans man in one of the classes, but there is a bit of other diversity of like non-binary and a lot of students are LGBTQ identified.
There's definitely things for men to learn in those classes.
Oh, definitely. There's so much they can learn. They can like just become a lot more aware of like societal pressures that men inadvertently put and like stereotypes that they've fallen trapped to.
So explain that, like stereotypes that men have fallen
like
trapped into.
Yeah. For example, like men have like learned stereotypically that they're supposed to be the provider, the caretaker. And this gives them an opportunity to realize if that's not realistically what works in for you, that it doesn't have to be that way. Or like they'll also learn things like that they've been taught to assume women can't do something, or like certain things that they've thought are actually like just misogyny that they don't even recognize in that way.
I absolutely see that. I mean, I can see that. See, that's one cool thing about this conversation is that there's a huge age gap.
Yeah, definitely.
Between us, right? I don't want to guess, but I would say I'm probably at least 20 years older than you are.
Yeah, I'm 20 for
yeah. Yeah. So we'll just stick with at least 23. We don't need to get specific.
Yeah, let's see that.
And so, you know, I grew up definitely very much in a world where, I mean, pink's my favorite color. I like to wear pink now. You'll find me wearing colorful things. It took me a long time to get there because there was just so much associated with that. I mean, I'm a big football fan. I'll probably not let my kids play football. My wife wouldn't let my kids play football for sure. And I understand that. But I also understand that like a big attachment to me for football is that that was one of the few places in my life growing up where it was okay for me to be emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was okay for me to show emotion and attachment to other men or other males in my life. I could cry with them.
Yeah.
I could express affection for them in that space. Any other space.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other space. I mean, I was a very well-rounded student, you could say. I played football. I played some other sports. I was also in band and choir, and I did some drama. And even though I played sports, there was always this little group of guys that liked to call me. There was this cartoon on MTV, which I think still exists. Yeah. Mm-hmm. called Ace and Gary. Do you remember anything about Ace and Gary, Ty?
I don't even remember Ace and Gary.
Oh, wow. They were like a Batman, Robin spinoff, but the characters were supposed to be very obviously gay. It was very crude. And so there was a group of guys, just a couple, three of them, that liked to call me Ace. Because I was in choir with their girlfriends and drama with their girlfriends. And it didn't bother me. I was never really that kind of person that was like, you could call me names. And I was going to really get to me. I always understood that that was you expressing your problems. Definitely growing up, it was a long time before, you know, actually it wasn't until my children, until I learned that, hey, I need to be, if I want to show my children that they could be themselves, mm-hmm. like you could really just be who you are, then I have to show them that. Like, I'm going to have to be able to go, what do I really like? What am I suppressing about myself because I'm scared of what I've been taught? I'm scared of how people are then going to define me and all of these different things. But then the other realization is that nobody really knows who I am.
No, yeah, that's really true. It's like societal upbringing teaches you to suppress certain things, like as a child, because it's, for I guess in your case, like too feminine of a hobby, that then you get told like at a young age, even if it's things like, no, don't do that, or turning off a TV, making you change the channel. It's subconsciously taught to you at such a young age that you don't even realize it as you get older.
Boys don't cry. That's a girl's toy. You know, all of those different things. And really, in a lot of ways, it creates kind of a cycle in teaching of self-hate, right?
Yes, it does.
Because you're told with words, hey, it's okay to be, just be yourself. Just be yourself. Let them love you for yourself. But no, don't do that. And don't be that part of yourself. And don't like this. And no, don't act like that. And no, don't feel like that. But be yourself.
No, that is exactly what happened. And it was definitely, it's getting less to be less of an issue for kids being raised now as it was like when you were raised, definitely.
Oh, I mean, I think a part of that is hopefully you're getting more parents like me that are like, just realize we were tired of walking around hating ourselves all the time. Because that's a big part of it. Yeah, it's like, hey, man. I have to feel bad about myself all of the time just because I like this color, or just because I give my kids a hug in front of everybody at school and I'm the dad. No. And the other part of it too is that you, once you realize, you know, kind of realize that's going on, you understand that like nobody really likes me or knows me. Everything that I did to make people like me or accept me or make me a part of things, all that really did was make people like this person that didn't really exist. You know, none of my friends were really my friends. Some of them stayed my friends. Yeah, some of them became my friends, if you will, in a lot of ways after I started becoming more of myself. But it's just that realization, too, that you know, if our biggest desire is to be a part and is to be loved, nobody loves you if they don't know who you are, if you're suppressing yourself.
Right. And it stunts your development into the kind of the person that you are. If you're constantly working against type and trying to worry about the way that you're coming off and those kinds of things, if you're trying to be the kind of person that people assume that you're going to be, which is what a lot of people mean when they say, oh, just be yourself in those contexts like you were talking about, then it's really hard for you to thrive, make a niche for yourself. You know, all of these little obstacles you're going to find as you're moving through life, and you're going to wonder, what's holding me back from this? What's keeping me from connecting with this person? That kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I could tell you you know, there's maybe you call them switch moments, right? Where they're not necessarily a big grand thing, but it's the moment when you hit that switch. And so my daughter is trans. One of my children's trans. And long before I knew that or anything, I remember watching her play video games. Mm-hmm. And she very much enjoyed playing as a female avatar.
Yeah.
And I didn't try and then read anything into it or say anything like that. But I did ask myself, I didn't ask myself, who is she or who are they? Who's my child? I asked myself, are you going to be who you need to be for whoever they are?
Yeah.
And I remember the very first pink thing, because I told my, it was just one of the things my whole life I've liked pink, and my whole life I've avoided it like a poison, because I've been taught that it is for me. Mm-hmm. Right. Even after it became okay, it still wasn't really okay. Right. It's, you know, not when you've got picked on enough or heard enough people pick on somebody else about pink, all of that. And so I decided I'm going to go buy something pink for myself to wear. So I went down to the store. And I went to the sunglasses rack, and I like the Aviator Maverick Top Gun sunglasses. And I sent one up there in pink. So I got it and walked up to the counter. I put it on the counter, and the cash register, I don't know if they have an official name. The cashier. There it is. Cashier, he picks the glasses up and he goes, you know, these are women's glasses. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of look at him. Really? And I take the glasses from him. And I look at him. And I turn them over in my hands. And I just look at him from absolutely every angle that I can. And he says, what are you looking for? And I said, a vagina. His eyes just got real wide, and I said, these glasses don't have a sex. And he didn't say anything else. He just rang him up and took my money. But I'll tell you, doing that in so many ways, because it you know, not just realizing it, but taking the action,
right?
You know, it was freeing. You know, don't get me wrong about that. It was freeing, and it certainly has allowed me to progressively more authentically express myself to everybody in my life, without question. But it also had a lot of other really good consequences. It made it very easy to let go of gender roles in my relationship. My house gets cleaner. My laundry gets done more often. I'm a much better husband. My wife is much happier. I'm a much better husband. I won't, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And I'm a much better dad than I was. Not that I was terrible, you know, not that I wasn't trying hard, but making those decisions made me a much better husband and father. And I like to think a much better member of my community in so many ways, just by acknowledging that being myself help me treat other people better.
No, yeah, I totally agree. I think an interesting fact you might find is that originally pink was designated as a color for boys back in the day.
Oh, it was. It used to be in like all the Sears catalogs and all of that. And, you know, wigs and high heels were all originally made for men, you know, back in royal courts. I remember taking and it's funny because it was great that I took this. I used to go to college. I didn't get a fancy degree or anything, but I did go to college off and on. And one of the courses that I took was history of dance. Now, this was quite a long time ago. I did not take history of dance because I was incredibly woke and forward thinking. I've always been liberal. I've never had any problems or anything with any of that. I've always been a very accepting person. I took history of dance because it counted as both a history and a PE credit combined.
Smart.
That's interesting.
But I did learn a lot about the history of dance, but also how that is related to culture and societies, especially royal societies across the world. And some of that was in regards to what they wore and how things were very specific and how much men actually were involved in these very, what were perceived now, feminine things, and how important it was for men to know how to do these things just right and even lose face in society if they didn't.
Totally, yeah. That's such a true point.
Yeah, tell the people in the court of Tsar Nicholas the First that I'm a boy, I'm not going to do ballet. That's not going to fly. Louis the 13th. Yeah, I don't like wigs. I'm not a wig person.
Yeah. So now me, obviously, I'm learning all this through trial and error, just, you know, cishet white men falling downstairs. In your experience, what's the classes you're taking, the courses you're at, what's your goal with that? Where are you taking that? Hopefully you're taking that knowledge to other people that look like me that need to hear it.
Oh, yes, definitely. My long-term goal is to work in advocacy at, like, specifically some sort of queer nonprofit.
Cool.
That's why I'm supposed to be in a couple of days starting an internship at the LGBT Life Center. I'm really excited for that, and I picked them because they are the largest in the area, which means they'll have as many more opportunities for me. Realistically, I do plan to, once I get my bachelor's degree, go for my master's, just so I can expand upon the knowledge long-term, realistically. But, I mean, eventually down the line, maybe I'd like to eventually start my own nonprofit eventually, but that's a ways away for me.
And so I know, I mean, being so involved in all of this, you've got to be very aware, like I am as a parent, of all the different laws going on all across the country. And, you know, I think we've been lucky in Virginia in a lot of ways with having the Senate in control and now, you know, control of both. So it doesn't necessarily mean we'll get a bunch of good stuff passed, but we know bad stuff's pretty much going to be thwarted. But how is this affecting, how do you see this at the college campus in the community?
I think it's definitely a discussion that gets brought up a lot. And I know it's a lot changed for a lot of people such as myself, like considering grad school. Like now I'm starting to be aware of, maybe I don't want to go to grad school in Florida if there's a risk that my program would get shut down without completing the degree. But I know there's also students who are looking at going into states like Texas so they can find work in advocacy, specifically fighting these laws while in school.
So there's kind of a split perspective on it. Do I really want to go to a school that has, you know, in a state with these laws, because they're not really going to support the education that I'm after, but this is where the fight's at.
Yeah, that's why I think there's definitely, like, it's kind of 50-50 on where people want to go, whether they want to be away from the fight and fight more locally and safer states, or if they want to be where they could be a threat and arrested, but they're in, like, the worst of the fight.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough call. Do you see it's 50-50 pretty much?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Where do you stand on it? Are you...
I personally think I'd like to spend graduate school somewhere for certain where I will get my degree, but I think afterwards I'd like to get more into the fight.
Yeah.
So you're more of the mind, I want to get armed degree, up and equipped up
equipped
and then
more then go into the
then
fight.
Jump into the fray.
Yeah.
That's a smart way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm super I admire just that whole, you know, certainly when I was your age, I was much more, I mean, everybody has their own life and is on their own trip, and mine was certainly not as much as I'd hate to admit it, just absolutely all about saving the world and helping people at the time. It was probably certainly more selfishly about saving myself and really my advocacy and my activism. People call me an activist. Now, you know, it was certainly inspired and motivated by, you know, my children and my desire to be, you know, a good supportive father, and really just as a father, I didn't see any other real option. It's, you know, people act like I'm making a choice. I don't see it as a choice. I protected my kids. That's not a choice.
No, I respect that. That's definitely just what I wish every parent would do. Every parent of a trans kid would respond the same way you do.
Well, and what about your parents? I mean, when you talk to them about your goals and what you're studying, was there like a, I thought you were going to be a doctor moment, or?
No, for context, my parents work in theater.
Okay.
So they were going, you're going to make more money than me anyways.
They're like, regardless.
You're making more than me anyways.
They're like, you could have skipped college and been making more money. But
all we cared is that you went and got a college degree. And they also always pushed on, I think my parents always told me, if you do what you love, then you've never worked a day in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you still work. Well, and there's another thing too, and in so many ways that people attach so much of their identity to their job in a lot of ways. And it's something we're taught when we're young. And a lot of adults never break out of it. And you know, there's always the conspiracy theory that it's very intentional, but it's certainly not completely unintentional.
No.
For us to be, you know, trained at a very young age. What are you going to be when you grow up?
Oh, definitely.
Be a scientist. I'm going to be a farmer. I'm going to be a cop and an astronaut and all of those things. And most of us are never going to grow up to be any of those things.
Oh, no.
That's not what they tell you. They're like, they don't tell you that, you know, that's all great, Johnny, but we still need about 45% of you to pick up a shovel.
Definitely.
And there's really only one or two management positions out of every 20 or 30 other positions.
Oh, definitely.
But people really attach, and I think that's part of why, you know, a lot of people struggle. And even, you know, they talk about the generation that doesn't want to work and all of that. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's the generation that doesn't want to swallow the lie and pretend like they weren't lied to. Because I was certainly lied to.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, you can grow up to be whatever you want. That's a load of crap. You're going to grow up and you're going to do what somebody will pay you to do.
Thank you.
No matter what you want to do. And what we should have taught you is that's not going to define who you are. That's just going to be what you do to pay your rent. Mm-hmm. And that you're still going to have this whole other most of your life that is about who you are. And hopefully what you do, hopefully somebody pays you to do what you like, but probably not. And even when they do, it's still going to be work. There's still going to be a whole lot of parts of it that suck because you got to do what somebody else wants for money.
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest issue people are seeing with like my current generation is that my generation is realistically going $12.50. I can't get pay for an apartment by myself and groceries and gas. So why am I willing to work for that wage that they're demanding more in exchange because they want a living wage?
That's... You know, and that's a big part of it. And it's hard. You know, I'm a manager. I have a crew of like 15 people. And they all vary in age. And one of the things is a lot of managers, at least managers that have been managers for a while, are pretty close to my age, you know. Mm-hmm. You have the occasional younger one. I became a manager fairly young. I've been one for a while now. But, and one of the things that comes up in our manager conferences, when we have these conferences of all the managers in the area get together, it's come up every single time, and it's this, they just don't want to work. Because we were all, you know, raised straight from the boomers, and we were taught that you work to death. Without that, it's your purpose in life. If you're not doing that, you're a loser. You're a deadbeat. And you should work when you're sick. And you work hard now, so maybe they'll pay you more later. And you should be grateful to have a job. And our managers, when before we became managers, for a lot of us, they were older than us, and even worse, it was, you know. And so very few have taken the time to really research being a manager to different generations. And very few understand that there's different motivations that you sound like. And I said this in one of our managers' meetings. They got mad at me. I was like, the music's too loud in here. And I can't believe all these kids are listening to this crazy rock and roll music, because that's what they sound like. I'm like, you don't understand. And rather than try and take the time to understand what motivates your younger employees and what they're interested in, and looking at things like flexibility, if you're not going to pay them more or paying them more, then you're right. They're not going to work for you, because that's honestly what we should have said 20 years ago. Is we should have said, no, I am not going to just be grateful that you gave me a job and that I could make my rent and put myself into debt for the rest of my life. Thank you very much. It's very much, a lot of people are caught in that trap. A lot of people my age especially are caught in that trap. And as managers now, a lot of us try and catch other people in that trap. I try and make sure that I don't do that to my employees. But do you see, like, you're not looking for jobs and stuff yet?
Not that much.
Not that much. Do you see it with any of your peers and them looking for jobs, that being a kind of a thing?
I know most of the people I know straight up say for like basic minimum wage kind of jobs, they refuse to work for under 15 in general, because that's their comfort number. Because I think what a lot of the older generations forget is minimum wage was lower back then, that small amount of money would get you a lot further. The cost of houses were possible to afford. There used to be, like, the father would go to work and his wife would stay home taking care of the children, and that one person could support the family. That's not possible anymore.
No, I mean, I don't even feel like it was possible in my life. I remember, at this point in my life, I get to just work like an 8-hour day. I pretty much get the weekends off. It's great. It lets me do extra things and not just be completely away from my family all the time. But you ask my oldest, because my oldest is a couple years older than you. Mm-hmm. And it was very different for them, because back then, first of all, my wife and I were both working. And that's how we made it. And rent was way cheaper back then. We were living in Portland, Oregon back then. And we were paying for a 3-bedroom apartment. Our rent was like $700, $725.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you couldn't rent an outhouse for a weekend for $725 in Portland now. But then, and we're talking about 15 to 18, 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was making probably somewhere between $15 and $18 an hour during that time as I progressed through the job that I was at. I have employees that make that now, and their rent is way,
way higher.
Way higher than that. But even then, when we had our younger children, we wanted one of us to be home with our kids. It was just too much. In order for that to happen, I did nothing but work. Mm-hmm. I had like two or three jobs, side hustle. It was weekends, everything. I just worked for like 10 years. I just worked, and maybe took a holiday off, the occasional weekend here and there, a weekend a month. And other than that, I just worked. And that was the only way to make it. And so for my oldest, they don't remember me being around as much as I am now for my younger two children. And so it is, I look at a lot of my employees and I know what they're going through. It's tough, and it's not, part of that is being young, but also it's not like everybody that I came up with made it to, you know, and I'm not in some lofty position or anything like that, but not everybody that I came up with is making the money that I'm making or anything like that. It's still a struggle that gets harder.
No, yeah, there's people who stay in like jobs like waitressing, food service, their entire lives, and just because there's, and that doesn't mean inherently that they're older, they're going to get more pay. And like waitresses, I still believe make still $2.75 an hour.
Plus tip.
$2.15.
Yeah, and it varies from state to state. I mean, back when I was 20 in California, I remember getting paid $5.75 an hour. I think that was minimum wage, was $5.75 an hour.
Wow. I think when I first started working, it was like $9 an hour.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, now in a lot of places, it's gone up to that $15, mm-hmm, and all of that. But, you know, it really is. And the problem is, it's kind of across the board problem. There's no support for the worker and the member of society, but all the support in the world for the corporation that benefits from them.
Yeah.
And until that imbalance kind of gets corrected, that's part of the problem too, is every raise a worker gets is a cost increase because the corporation just sucks the money back in.
Exactly.
It's an inherently antagonistic relationship that people don't realize.
Oh, and it's a cycle that perpetuates itself, right? Because it's the corporations that donate the money into the political funds. And if you don't get that money, you can't compete in a race. Nobody will even know who you are.
Absolutely.
And so they get to buy the candidates that's going to keep them in the position to suck any extra money the workers get right back into the gas pump or the grocery store cash register, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
And so hopefully one of my biggest hopes from the generation where I'm at is that your generation and my younger children's generation will help correct that, because, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, other than voting now, you know, definitely doing our part, one of the best things that we can do is try and teach you not to screw things up. I was trying to explain that to my oldest, because they were really talking about one day how you guys don't always do what you tell us we should do. I'm like, yeah, and you're going to find that's the case, because I want you to be better than me. I'm trying to tell you to be better than me.
Yeah, I think that's
funny. I'm working on those things, but I'm wanting you to not learn them so you don't have to spend the rest of your life unlearning like I am.
Yeah, I think every generation wants the generation after them to be better than them.
Yes, we just, I think it's taken us a long time to understand what that really means, because I think for a very long time, every generation has wanted the next generation to be a better version of them.
Yeah.
I think we're finally progressing to a place where we understand that the best thing is for the next generation to be the best version of who they are.
Yeah.
And not just a better version of who we were.
Exactly. Also, I think every single like person has a different definition of what better is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is, you know, that's why there's politics, right?
Because
everybody has a different definition of what better is. And in some ways, you know, some people don't always agree that progress is a good thing. You know, but I think what the most important thing is, and something that's getting lost, at least certainly on one side of the argument, is that everybody has the right to go after that, whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And it's not about there being, you know, you don't have, your best way doesn't have to be my best way. It's fine because you're not me. Mm-hmm. If your best way is working for you and it's not hurting anybody else, more power to you. I encourage you to go for it. Key being, it's not hurting anybody else. But your best way doesn't need to be my best way.
No,
we don't need to be living the same life. And there seems to be a philosophy, at least from one area, that mm-hmm. seems to think we do all need to be living, that there is only one best way, and it's their best way.
Yeah,
and I think that's part of part of the problem, or a big part of the problem, you know. And of course, there's the spinoff symptoms of that, of, you know, once people are hurt people hurt people.
Yeah, definitely.
And as much as we all want to be big enough to not do that, not a lot of us are. And even the biggest of us, sometimes you hurt us enough and we will hurt you back just because we're human and we're not perfect.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you get that into enough, and, you know, I think eventually I've tried to articulate this before. But it's really not about changing people's minds. We get really focused on changing people's minds, and facts and statistics and information is great. It's useful. Everybody should be open to it. But we really need to start opening each other up and opening up our hearts to each other. Because we are, in so many ways, we've stopped seeing people as people. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah. It's hard. It's so hard when you're sitting across from somebody who is younger than you to not give advice, to get into a situation where you're like, oh, wait, hey, are you doing this? Are you doing that? Can you not? You know what I mean? It's hard to not do that. But that is because, you know, especially people who, you know, have been through some challenges in their life, they always want to, you know, make sure that, like you were saying, the younger generation doesn't have to deal with the same problems. But that's a really good way to contextualize it. For all the things we've been talking about having to do with capitalism and things like that, because some of that is kind of eking its way into the territory that I like, which is Marxism and Leninism. Are you finding now, on like your particular college campus, I know you can't speak for all of them, but are you finding that it is very polarized like it is in the adult world, where it's kind of half and half? Or are you finding that it really is more of there's a farther swing left? More people are kind of internalizing that idea, that antagonistic relationship between capital and, you know, workers is a real problem that needs to be remedied.
I think it is still 50-50, but I think that the, like, more Republican side of the younger generation have learned that certain opinions they hold, they can get in trouble for. For example, like, they've learned that they just have to, like, suck it up and respect a pronoun. Like, there's definitely students who will do it to the face, and then as soon as they're not there, stop. But because they're smart enough to learn there's consequences.
Yeah.
So they, and certain things that no matter how they feel about it, they can't get away with it in this certain setting, and it's something they have to keep with, like, they can do it among their friends, say that these beliefs among their friends, but learning they can't say in, like, an academic setting.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, and here's the thing about the pronouns and all of that is, you know, you really, if you don't want to address somebody the way that person prefers to be addressed, whether or not you agree with it, then that means you have now opened the door for yourself to also be addressed however somebody desires to address you. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. So if you don't want to use somebody's pronouns, that's great. If they decide to start addressing you as Mr. McDoucheybag, don't get upset. You're Mr. McDoucheybag to them.
I thought it wasn't a problem.
Exactly.
Thought it wasn't a problem just to call you whatever I want. And that's, to me, that's the big thing. It's not even about agreeing with somebody. I don't agree with a lot of people's beliefs and religions. I don't go out of my way in any way to disrespect them. Matter of fact, I'm more likely to, especially if I'm with you, to respect a tradition or a belief that you have, if it doesn't harm me at all, just because I know it will make you more comfortable and make you feel more valued, as you should feel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's the same concept as if you had a friend who's not comfortable, who's vegan and maybe doesn't like to see you eat meat products, just choosing to not eat meat around them. Same concept.
Absolutely. Like, I am by no means, like, do I have a belief that people should not eat meat? No, I don't. Like, I actually have had plants that I like more than most people. And live under the belief that, look, if you're alive, you're killing something. That's part of being alive. And everybody has their different reasons, and they're valid. That's just how I feel. But if I put on a dinner for people, there's going to be a vegan option. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a vegan option for those people to come eat and be a part of the community.
Yeah.
And so I'll be remiss if I don't bring it up in some way, because Thea definitely always likes to, very rightfully so, circle back to this topic, because it is so important. Family. In the college setting, you know, you work very closely with the LGBTQ community. What's your experience in that community? A lot of supportive family, a lot of struggles.
I think it's pretty mixed relationships. Like, I know there's some students who are taking out loans for college because their parents are not willing to support them because they're queer.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And would have been willing to support them had they not been queer. But I'm also aware there are other parents who are completely supportive. It seems to be a good mixture.
Okay. And is there like a community, do you see like an intermixing of that community?
Oh, definitely.
A sharing of that support, if you will.
Yes. Like, I think a lot of times in general, queer students choose to find other queer students. And it doesn't matter if they come from a supportive family or not. They're like, they still to some extent understand the same, have similar struggles. And they choose to bond and become friends.
Yeah. And I'm so curious, because as a dad, you know, especially in the college and as my children are going into high school, mm-hmm. You know, I'm very aware that I will become, in a lot of ways, you know, we're close and they'll always keep talking to me and all of that, but you know, they're going to become more away from me. That's just natural. I did it. Every kid does it. And so I like to ask these questions because my kids are going to be going into that. I want to have an understanding, you know, as much as I can of the world that they're going into. I also listen to the music that I hear them listen to just because, you know.
Play the games that
they play. Yeah. I do. You'll find me on Fortnite. You'll find me. We play Halo matches. I haven't been able to quite get into the Roblox investment yet, but you know, we're doing the D&D together now. We used to do the Pokemon, but I did just get him some magic cards. They're upgrading to a, you know, a little bit more advanced card game or whatnot. I try and spend a lot of time with my, it keeps me young too.
Yeah.
It really does. It keeps me young and you know, not necessarily up to date and talking in the latest slang or any of that sort of stuff, but it keeps me, you know, connected. I feel like with other people, and it also keeps me very much connected with them. I know what they're talking about. You know, I can ask them a lot more than just how was school.
No, yeah. That's always a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I know a whole lot about different Roblox games, probably way more than I should, especially without playing them myself. Yeah. And I'm a little bit proud of how many Fortnite skins I have and that I get every single new Victory Royale umbrella. So
no, we're losing you.
No, lose me live. You'll find me playing Fortnite by myself sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
That's cool.
I have nephews and sometimes my kids' friends will spot me on and hop into my lobby and want to play matches with me. It's, yeah, you're not losing me. I'm gone.
Yeah.
Far gone.
Excellent. Well, that's good. That's one of the things, is as somebody who is an ally and was coming to this without having a family member who is trans or gender nonconforming, what absolutely blew me away and changed my perspective almost instantly. Before ever getting involved, just meeting Charlie and meeting Thea, was the concept of family and how that works in the queer community. How important, when you watch the news and you hear about, you know, queer themes, these are all moving through a filter of people who are not not involved in it. People who are, you know, here's what the people who are against these people have to say. Here's what the people for them have to say. Here's a new law that's being passed, etc. And it really gets downplayed a lot how important the concept of family is, what the struggles and challenges for parents of trans people are, for kids who have parents who are trans, for family units who are dealing with just trying to have a family, trying to raise their kids in a world that has suddenly politicized their identities. And it is something that just doesn't get talked about a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts, a lot of, you know, leftist podcasts, queer podcasts, and it doesn't even come up there. And I think that it's something that I can really see that becoming, especially over this next year, a bigger focus of a lot of the attention that ally communities and communities that are not queer communities are going to be paying to what it means to be a member of those communities.
Well, yeah, and I think what you're seeing, you know, now, gratefully, and hopefully we'll continue to see more of, are some parents that have gotten educated, and that have gotten brave and are just willing to stand up for their kids. But, you know, I think there's also, in seeing that, very much also this realization of kind of the intentionality of separating LGBTQ and trans people from the family unit. That's why you're not going to hear them really talk about it on, you know, certainly conservative podcasts and conservative shows and things like that. And when you do, it's very much in a way to once again separate from family, right? Because what they've done, then you look at the recent things where now it's trans people against parents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Once again, trying to create that separation of family. And even when you were looking at, and I remember it didn't get put, you know, one of the times when I was on the news here locally, and they certainly didn't put this in the interview when they put it on TV. But one of the things that I told them was it's very clear in the news that when they were broadcasting and writing about these school board meetings, that they were trying to very much make it look like it was these kids against the parents, these LGBTQ students and the trans people against the parents. When the truth was at the school board meetings, most of the actual parents of students were in support of the students. They were against the policies. It was people that didn't even have kids in school, or maybe they had grandkids in school, or, you know, people from church that were 80, 70 years old that were showing up to talk in support of these discriminatory policies. The actual parents of children in school were by far overwhelmingly against the policies.
Huh.
But that's not how they wrote it up in the news. They wrote it up in the news. It was these students that had activated, and they were against these parents. And, you know, like I said, I told the reporter that, but they didn't put that out there. But but you see that it's very much when it does get talked about, it gets talked about in a way that very much also has the intention of trying to separate that community from family. And then you see that mirrored in your liberal and leftist media, because they have been separated from family. And so they don't talk about family because that's a big source of their trauma now.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, you see that cycle perpetuating itself. But I think that's part of why some of these parents like me across the country standing up for their trans kids and their LGBTQ kids has had some of that effect, is because it's brought some of that to light. Is there's not this overwhelming, these people aren't loved and they should be thrown away from their families feeling. This is, you know, and so, yeah, I think that's just a huge part of it, is for years, generations now even, this intentional effort to separate LGBTQ people from their family. And that's what we're seeing now is once again that same thing, and even targeting it at children. You should do something about your child if they're trans or LGBTQ.
I just think that the entry of that into everybody's brain, the fact that you said it, even if it didn't make the news that time, the problematization and exoticization of all of this is going to become a topic. It will, like you were talking about, kids at school knowing what they, you know, shouldn't say. I can really see over the next couple of years this being something that news media will be more sensitive about and understanding that, oh, wait a minute, I'm problematizing something that isn't, or I'm trying, the way that I've written this exoticizes this and draws it away from something that is, you know, supported overall by a family or is a natural thing that is happening inside of a family. So,
I know we're getting a little bit towards time.
Okay. Was there anything, Gray, that you wanted to, anything you saw in the news that you wanted to comment on?
Not off the top of my head, though.
Okay, yeah.
I did want to bring up the new Florida House bill that was introduced recently. House Bill 1233. Basically an attempt to erase trans people, at least legally, from Florida society. Mm-hmm. You have to register as male or female. When you get your driver's license or any sort of ID, you have to sign an affidavit that says you marked the sex that you were born as on it. And the really big one, the kind of extra slice was in the bill, they're going to require health insurance companies to cover basically conversion therapy for trans youth. Just.
Yeah. At the same time, there's states that are actively working to ban it. At the same time, Florida's trying to have therapy. It covered by insurance.
So someone knows that it's wrong and doesn't work and mentally harmful to people. So
I guess this is where you kind of run into, I like to call it the state's rights versus the human rights argument. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I see that.
Like what rights trump what? Because that's the whole point. You know, I think we've talked about this before. That's the whole point of a federal government, isn't it? That to eliminate states' rights being able to just decide on human rights.
Yeah. I'm almost guarantee if it tries to pass, the ACLU is going to sue the state of Florida over it.
Oh,
take it to court immediately.
Sure. Absolutely. I don't see how it could pass and be not at odds with federal law.
No.
Completely. But what I think so funny about this is when they're trying to get it done in the state, it's all about states' rights. Then once they get it done in the state, their big promise for their next political election is how they're going to get it done in the country. All of a sudden, state rights aren't as important. The federal government should be involved once their state decided that the law should be there.
They're all for states' rights when a Democrat is in office, but when a Republican's in office, it's all about federal rights.
That's... So
it's just their rights.
That's exactly right. What we want is our right. How does that look on the college campus? Because I mean, the one thing that I'm aware of, just because I read way too much and want to know why, how, if, what of too many things, is that, you know, young people don't vote as much as they should.
No, they unfortunately don't.
I mean, is there anything happening? If you had something like, you're gonna vote, yes,
definitely, 100%.
If you had something that you would tell the people trying to get young people to vote, is there any initiatives really going on at school that kind of go into that? I mean, in my mind, because I spent most of my time at like an actual community college campus, not anything so grand as ODU, but in my mind, and it's because I've seen too many movies, you know, I picture the college campus as this, everybody knows the vote and there's people out there with information and all of that. What's it really like?
There's a couple social media accounts that'll do it, but the student has to go know about the account and go through this effort of following it, who will then tell you where your polling place is, who's on the ballot, how to register to vote, but you have to go out and look specifically to find those resources. They're not like easily accessible.
So there's not like a real active effort to just make that out there for...
No, because I think unfortunately both parties have the mindset of if you want to know, you can Google it. But not everyone's willing to go out of their way to Google it.
Well, I mean, I know why one party doesn't try and encourage young people to vote, because they overwhelmingly do not vote in their favor. But I was definitely curious why the other party doesn't really go after that. Maybe they just...
I think sometimes they're scared people are going to vote if there's the issue around like third party voting. Because like I've heard a lot of people who are hoping that, but I've also seen in history when that happens, and it instead happens to split a party vote.
Yeah, well that is, you know, that is a big thing, is splitting the party vote. I personally wish that we didn't just get force fed
two options
that we really didn't have any choice in, but maybe that's something you guys could help us fix.
Maybe one day, definitely.
Maybe one day.
Please.
if people at school or even people out want to support the programs that you're working on with ODU, how do they find that?
They can find that on Instagram at ODU_Saga, SAGA, or ODU_Blacksphere. And that's the easiest way they can get it. All events are posted on Instagram at least a week, typically 2 weeks before, with information on location and everything provided.
All right. And you can find all the events that I talked about at kaloscoalition.com. You can also feel free to click that donate link. And remember that the biggest gift you can ever give is yourself. So if you're wherever you're at, here in the Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads area, or just where you're at, find a way to give your time. Give yourself, be part of the cause. And I think that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you so much today for being with us, Gray.
Thank you. At the last minute, coming through.
Yeah, no problem.
You were a superhero. I really appreciate the insight, the input, what you're doing. Just going after that dream. That's awesome. Being in the fight. And I'm also really heartened to hear that you have some fellow peers and soldiers out there that are even willing to go move to a place like Texas just to be in the middle of it. That's great stuff. You do give us hope. So
yes.
All right. Well, that's Talking Transparency. Enjoy us and join us on the next podcast.
Take care. Bye.
Talking Transparency is brought to you by the Kalos Coalition. Our theme music is by SKS. If you enjoyed the show, please check us out on all the socials at talkingtransparency.com or check out our link tree at Talking Trans. Visit our website at talkingtransparency.com and please consider supporting us at patreon.com/talkingtransparency.